Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to the Reception, Perception, the show. Oh, my goodness gracious. Lots to talk about today. Again, we always talk about wide receivers, and we will talk about wide receivers, but a fresh profile drop of running backs have hit the site as well. Yours truly, me, James Coe, have written about Ashton Jeanty, Trevion Henderson, and Omarion Hampton. And can't wait to get into those profiles because I tell you what, man, I people are going to be, especially in New England, they're going to be mad at me when they see charts for Trevion Henderson. If that's not a tease, I don't know what is.
I can't wait to, now I really can't wait to talk about it because I have found the Trevion Henderson fantasy ADP a little skeptical. So I have been a little skeptical about that fantasy ADP. So I am excited to break this down with you. It should be fun.
But regardless, we have to start the conversation with Rashee Rice there in Kansas City. He played 8 games last year, 78 targets, 53 receptions, 571 yards in just those 8 games. Pretty good. 5 touchdowns, a 68% catch rate, 10.8 yards per reception. That was a 3-year low for Rashee Rice. What does the reception perception profile tell us about Rashee, though?
Honestly, I'm like tired of talking about Rashee Rice. So there's talk about the inverse of a sell, right? You just gave a great sell for the Trevion Henderson thing. But
yeah,
honestly, a big part of this is just I don't really have a lot. And I'm actually discouraged that this is my stance on this. I was hoping to go into charting his 2025 season and really finding like some new conclusions and really seeing, like, oh, he really took a step in this area. He improved here. And like now they might be able to do this, that, and the other with him. But like my stance on Rashee Rice just like honestly really hasn't changed in the 3 years he's been an NFL player. And, you know, obviously if you're familiar with his prospect charting way back in that 2023 class, He's going to go down as like one of my biggest misses if you just look at my rankings. Like he's somebody that I ranked extremely low, was really not into him as a prospect. And I got that evaluation wrong. A big part of that is because like essentially I evaluated him as like a developmental X receiver. What I wrote about him at the time was that he had the frame, athleticism, and the fire needed to eventually become like a useful player as a vertical X receiver. And he just really wasn't very far away. Obviously, very athletic, had a lot of juice to him, as I said, and the size and everything. But he really had a long, long way to go as a route runner and as a technician, as a boundary player. And then the Chiefs just essentially took all those raw traits and everything and completely flipped it on its head in terms of his usage. He became this like short area, slot-based, yards after catch option. And so, again, he is a much more useful player than I expected him to be in a completely different role than I expected him to be playing in. And that has essentially been what he's been for 3 years now as a guy who has, I think, in my opinion, very obvious limitations to him as a player, but real strengths as a zone beater, as a yards after catch option, and a guy who can win on the quick hitting routes. The problem is, and this isn't necessary, and we'll expand on this and I'll kind of unpack this thought. It's honestly less of like a Rashee Rice problem those descriptions I get, it's like, oh, this is just who he is as a player, and that's totally fine. We'll throw out some other examples of guys, you know, that the player comparison tool highlights that also, like, I would highlight anecdotally that are similar to Rice from a reception perception standpoint, who have been good players for a spurt in the NFL. So it's, again, it's not necessarily like this is a Rice problem on the field. Off the field, there's a lot of Rice problems. The problem is just that they
correct.
The problem is just that they really haven't developed anyone else who can do the other things. So again, my thought of why I'm kind of tired of talking about this is just that, like, he's been the same guy for 3 years, and I wish there was more to the picture, because, you know, then I think we could really buy into the production, which has been incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
But the problem is that the production honestly was there last year, and the offense wasn't very good. And I think that was a big issue for Kansas City.
Okay. So when we compare his 2024 to his 2025, obviously a lot of the numbers have gone down dramatically. That being said, in 2024, he only played 4 games. In 2025, mm-hmm. he only played 8 games. I mean, the guy's only played 12 football games over the past 2 years.
It's a great point. Right?
So, I mean, I almost wonder, do we even know what we have here in regards to Rashee Rice? But the numbers in 2025, my goodness gracious, they're... It's a look, as you pointed out, it's a mixed bag, but a lot of it's bad though, Matt. I mean, just from a straight up reception perception profile, 55% success rate versus man coverage, that was a 9th percentile score, was still really good against zone, but again, against press, 57.8%. Again, that's a 23rd percentile number. We really want that number around 75-ish% if we really start getting into that elite territory, 70% if we're talking about good. But 57% against press is, again, a poor score. Then you look at the route chart. There's a lot of red here. Mm-hmm. I mean, shoot, even on the slant route, did not crack 80%. On the slant route, a route that he's been good at historically, at least in his previous 2 years.
Right. I mean, and he's running such a high volume of those routes. 30.1% of his routes were slants. 13% of his routes were screens. I mean, that's almost half the route chart. That's 43% of your route chart. That is pretty outrageous. And pretty much the only other things he's running at high volumes is Diggs, 17%. And he's actually a 65% success rate versus Diggs. That's below average. You can't tell by the man versus zone splits, 9th percentile success rate versus man, 83rd percentile success rate versus zone. You know, that's he's actually pretty good. We're going over the intermediate middle of the field against zone coverage. Same with like post routes, where he's kind of average as from a success rate standpoint. He's just not a man coverage beater. He's still like not a very nuanced route runner. I also thought last year, and this is something I almost feel like never gets brought up with him. You mentioned some of the numbers are down from a statistical standpoint. Since he's coming to the league, he's incredibly impressive from like the advanced metric standpoints. He's 5th in the NFL since he came into the league in 2023 in first downs per route run. He is 8th in yards per route run. He's been up there in terms of those type of things. But the explosive plays definitely felt like they weren't there as much last year. And I feel like this isn't brought up enough. This guy's dealt with a lot of injuries and is coming to this year again off of an injury that he rehabbed while he was in jail, you know, so like a surgery that he rehabbed while he was in jail. So I just wonder if like, I don't say this as a negative to Rice, because this guy gets blasted in the role that he's in.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something I noted a lot when working on him, from a film standpoint last year. This guy's just getting smoked with some of these plays over the middle of the field, which is, yeah, that's what happens. And teams know that. Like, you really started to see, because not only is Rice obviously not a vertical threat, he barely runs any vertical routes, 4.5% route percentage on nines, 5.9% on post, 1.1% on corners, outs under 5%. Like, there's just nothing really going on here from a deep standpoint. Teams know that. Teams watch this film, and they also are like, well, we're not scared of Xavier Worthy deep. We're not really scared. Honestly, we're really not scared of Patrick Mahomes throwing it deep, because they don't do it very often. And when they do it, it ain't good.
Not very good.
Like, it hasn't been working. So they're not that scared of their deep passing game, which is kind of outrageous to say. So yeah, they might still be in those like too high shells and things like that, but they're hunting these short throws, and Rice just gets lit up all the time on these plays. And, you know, that's going to just wear down the body pretty consistently, because he's not a receiver that, you know, is taking a he's running boundary routes and dipping out of the sideline after catching a quick out or a hitch route or something like that. No, this guy's going over the middle of the field. And even if it's not your dad's NFL or not James Coe's NFL, because he's ancient.
I am a dad. I'm a dad as well.
Yeah, you know, your dad's NFL, James Coe, very much a dad. Okay, like, guys still hit. You still get hit going against zone coverage over the middle, and Rashee Rice goes against zone coverage over the middle pretty much at a higher rate than any receiver in the NFL.
You and I have talked about this and flirted with this, but I do think that we have to adjust expectations and injury expectations for guys who go over the middle a lot. You know, I think Rashee Rice is obviously the prime example of that. Look, we already bake this in when we talk about running backs because we know they're going to get hit quite a bit. But for a for wide receivers who line up in the slot and as you mentioned, get blasted while going over the middle, we haven't really, as a football community, baked that in almost at all. I mean, we treat slot receivers the same we treat as boundary X receivers do. It's just like, well, they're a receiver. Their injury rates are pretty low, and we treat them that way. So I find that to be interesting, and the more that we kind of sort of dive into this whole idea, the more I think it's relevant. You know, the fact that these guys who do play inside, they do get hit more. They do sustain some injuries more. I mean, especially if we're talking along the concussion front, but lower body injury too. Look, we're not doctors, man. And maybe we should ask doctors about this. But if you kind of isolate slot receiver play versus X receiver play or outside, you know, receiver play, what's the injury rates? I think that would be, I'll tell you what, man, that information I think would go a long way too.
I think so too. And it's tough though as well, because, you know, their lines are really blurring between like what's an outside receiver and what's a slot receiver. You know, Puka Nacua is a primary outside receiver, but he does a lot of kind of like power slot ish things, you know, some of the design. And that's another thing with Rice too. I mean, all told, he has taken 47.6, 43.6, and 44.9% of his sampled snaps from the slot and backfield combined in each of his first three pro seasons. But he actually saw his rate of snaps in the backfield jump last year because they – listen, you guys know this if you've watched the Chiefs offense. As much as we can criticize their passing game, and I have been probably at the forefront of doing that the last few years, their run game is worse. Their run game is even worse than their passing game, which will be an interesting conversations we go project this forward with Rice because they added Kenneth Walker. But yeah, their run game has been such a disaster. They've kind of had to essentially use Rice as an extension of the run game and get him some of these creative touches things, and including truly lining him up in the backfield, not even as a motion guy, but even in like some wildcat looks and stuff like that. And yeah, you just can't tell me that that's not gonna, if we're talking about running back injury risk and everything, you're using this guy almost like a running back at times. It's gotta increase his injury risk a little bit. And I mean, through three seasons, especially these last 2 years, just tons of injuries for this player, which is obviously unfortunate. And I think is a part of why he, you know, hasn't been able to kind of maybe even improve a little bit, but yeah, it is really unfortunate. I do think the injury risk is something to talk about with him.
Yeah. We were talking about the injury history here for Rashee Rice. He had a knee cleanup most recently in May, had a concussion in 2025. He had a torn LCL PCL in 2024. And a knee hyperextension and a bone bruise also in 2024. So yeah, man, it's been a rough go here for Rashee Rice for sure. Okay, we'll keep an eye on that and see what's going on. But again, I do encourage folks to kind of sort of look at the profile. The profile is just, it's interesting.
It's interesting. I mean, he's one of the most fascinating players because, like, let me just read off the list of, and these are two lists that he belongs to. These are the top 10 players in first, and I think first downs per route run is one of the best receiver stats out there. These are the top 10 receivers in that metric since he came into the league in 2023. It's Puka Nacua, it's Tyreek Hill, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Brandon Ayuk. Woof. Rashee Rice, Nico Collins, AJ Brown, CeeDee Lamb, Drake London, Stephon Diggs. If you look at yards per route run, which I also think is a good stat, not a complete stat, but a good stat. I like first downs a little bit better, but Puka Nacua, Nico Collins, Tyreek Hill, Brandon Ayuk. Woof again. CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Rashee Rice, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. Wow. I mean, like, there's some crossover here, obviously, on both those lists. Of course, a who's who of great receivers, and like, he is there from a production standpoint. And the problem is, like, you look at his skill set versus any of those other guys, I'm sorry, he comes up lacking in certain areas. That doesn't mean that he's a bad player. I don't think Rashee Rice is a bad player. And like, again, some of the comparables for him, if you look at his top three comparables in the player comparison tool, you get two Deebo Samuel seasons. You also, Like that's the type of player that he is. Juju Smith-Schuster is another guy I would throw out, you know, as a player that is comparable to this. It was a limited man coverage player, but a big, burly slot zone, really good zone beater. I mean, Juju has some really excellent success rate versus zone seasons. Rice is a little bit more constricted to like the short areas as compared to these guys. Obviously, if you look at air yards per target of all those guys that I read out there, Rashee Rice in his career, 4.69 is crazy.
Oh my God,
I mean, like Amon-Ra St. Brown is the second lowest at 7.8.
Yeah,
it's wild. I mean, it's one of the lowest ones out there. Anyways, and that's among receivers with 500 routes since he came into the league. It's like 4.69 is crazy low. It is the lowest out of 127 qualifying receivers in that time period. The other guys that are in the bottom five are Greg Dortch, Malik Washington, Khalil Shakir, and Juju Smith-Schuster. Oh, by the way, 122nd. Deebo Samuel. Like,
hey, there you
obviously
go.
Those are guys closer towards to the end of their careers, of course. I get that. But here's the problem, too. Two things. One, I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster, Deebo Samuel, those guys entered decline well before they were even in their 30s because guys got lit the F up, you know, and had a lot of injuries in their careers because of this role. And secondly, the Steelers were able to have Juju be this great player because they also had Antonio Brown. Once Antonio Brown left, Juju Smith-Schuster started falling off, and he was eventually just, you know, Wally pipped by Deontay Johnson, who certainly was nobody's idea of a perfect player. And Deebo Samuel, like when the Niners offense was at its best, it was Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk when he was this awesome man coverage receiver. And obviously other threats as well, but specifically that offense really hit its peak form in, you know, 2023, even in 2022, when Brandon Ayuk got kind of integrated there. So that's the problem. That really is the problem. Like this profile for Rice, obviously it's incomplete. It leaves us with questions, you know, certainly relative to the other guys that he is up there with from a production standpoint. The bigger problem for Kansas City's offense is that they've not been able to find a second pitch. Like Xavier Worthy, obviously got to give him a little bit of a pass for what happened last year because he was, I was lower than consensus on Worthy, but if we're going to sit here for all these 2024 drafted receivers like Ricky Pearson, Roma Dunze, and Brian Thomas Jr. and Marvin Harris, and these guys were banged up. They were banged up all throughout. So was Xavier Worthy. You know, if we're going to be, this is a radically honest podcast here. We're radical candor here, James. Got to admit that. So maybe he's that guy, but that's never really been his skill set either. They just don't really have a guy with that skill set. I think that's the bigger problem for Kansas City's offense, in addition to the fact that they don't have a very good run game, which might change this year. And I do wonder if Kenneth Walker, if that run game, and I actually think the run game could kind of kick ass this year. I know you're a big Kenneth Walker fan. They invested a lot in their defense. I do kind of wonder if this is going to be like a rock fight, ground and pound team this year, which will mean less of the, you know, Rashee Rice, all respect intended, PPR scam offense. And I think that the offense, Rashee Rice, like numbers would not be as good, but I do think that the offense might be better if they're just a more traditional run game and they can actually have a real play action pass game based off that. But we'll see. A lot of questions to answer about this Kansas City offense.
Yeah, two things real quick in regards to KC. One, they've got Eric Bieniemy back in the fold, so their run game will be better, period.
Yeah.
Point blank, period. They've got a better running back in Kenneth Walker, who I'm a big fan of. Plus, they've got Eric Bieniemy. I think those two guys are going to work really well together. So, yes, their run game, if Kenneth Walker stays healthy, will 100% be better. As a matter of fact, they've got a great backup, too, man. Again, read the profile on Emmett Johnson. Yep. I really like Emmett Johnson, too. I think he's going to be a great fit for Bieniemy and that run game. Number two is, this is the most obvious area of need for the Kansas City Chiefs, and it has been for years in regards to the wide receivers, and they continue to not address it, and I don't understand why.
Yeah.
They obviously must have had an opportunity to talk to Mike Evans's camp. Couldn't sell him on that. They must have, you know, again, they could have addressed that in the draft. They did not. And they continue to just get these guys that are smallish zone beating type dudes. And I'm baffled by it all, man. I don't get it. Andy Reid obviously is one of the greatest coaches of all time, arguably the greatest coach of all time when you look at the resume overall. but I'm wondering, and the whispers are growing louder, Matt, that the game is passing him by. And man, I tell you what, them not addressing wide receiver for the past few years is, I think, one of the biggest downfalls of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you, man. I agree. And I've been saying that for a minute now. And I hope that I was kind of hoping to see some thought that they might be changing things up from a pass game standpoint. And I do agree that Bieniemy will make the run game better. But the problem is there, like, I mean, he's still just kind of more of the same from a offensive tree standpoint, you know, and yeah, modernizing things. I think that's just been, this happens with guys. And I mean, I've said it over and over again, all the respect in the world to Andy Reid, who, yeah, as you said, might be the best coach of all time. Right. But at the same time, like, there's just been issues in this passing game. And I don't think I have any evidence at this point that there's going to be change there. So it's unfortunate, but hopefully we're wrong about that. Just to put some numbers behind this.
Yeah.
Like, when Rashee Rice was on the field last year, this offense was 16th in success rate. From a dropback standpoint, they were, you know, still pretty good. From an EPA standpoint, of course, they're going to be, they have Patrick Mahomes, but the issue there is just like the consistency. And I do think that obviously had real limitations to it. We got to get to a better place overall with this offense. It can't be that. And there's a lot of questions in the pass game, but I do have some optimism about the run game. And hopefully we see that, you know, at least help the passing game and that they can run some more traditional play action stuff. But I don't know that they will from a schematic standpoint.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of run games, we transition to the running back position. We start at Ashton Jeanty here. He disappointed, obviously, from a production standpoint, just from an on-field standpoint, and honestly from a vibe standpoint, man. Like, there was just so many plays. You're like, what are we doing out here, Ashton Jeanty? But now he's got a brand new head coach in Clint Kubiak, and, you know, I think people rightfully are pretty excited about Ashton Jeanty here. So my major takeaway when you bring in Clint Kubiak, obviously he's a run game guy, man, outside zone dude, multi-generational outside zone guy. And for me, Ashton Jeanty, I think when he gets to the outside, Matt, is a pretty special player. There was mixed messaging, I think, from the run game in regards to the Carrolls and Chip Kelly. But
mixed messages is putting it really, really nicely.
Yes, it is. But I think there will be very clear messaging from Clint Kubiak and company. But no, I think Ashton Jeanty, to me, is primed for a really nice bounce back. And I'm really, really excited about what this year might unfold. But man, I know people are going to look at the box score and say 3.7 yards per carry. Why would you be that excited about Ashton Jeanty as a prospect in terms of a prospect, you know? But I am. I'm extremely excited.
Okay, good. Because that's what people need to hear. Like, if we're trying to isolate players, and obviously it's easier to do that at receiver than running back, but nevertheless, yeah, like, that is the goal of the charting here. I think the important, like we all realize we can kind of give Ashton Jeanty, who still statistically had a good rookie season, all things considered, 1,300 yards from scrimmage. Just obviously efficiency wasn't there, but we all kind of know the deal at this point. Like,
yeah,
he's getting hit in the backfield a ton. We all remember when he had more yards after contact than real true yards because he was getting hit in the backfield one of those games somewhere along the way. At the same time, like, who is he as an individual player? Because we know we're giving him the pass. We know that he's going to get a better run game here. We know we're going to get like an identity in the run game. And I think in the pass game as well, which is exciting. So, yeah, I guess the question for you, James, is just like, how good is Ashton Jeanty as an individual player?
Yeah, when you try to isolate what he can do, I think I focus on a couple of numbers here, right? Like, he had a 29% unblocked defender rate. So 29% of his carries that I charted, there was an unblocked defender coming into the backfield.
Seems bad.
That's not good.
That seems unideal. Not ideal.
His 41% inside run success rate was one of the worst I've ever charted. And a lot of that had to do with, again, because a 29% unblocked defender rate is just crazy high. Over the past two seasons, it's the second highest I've ever charted, right? So that's not good. But when he did get to the outside, when the pocket didn't like collapse immediately, when those inside guards and tackles just didn't give up their block instantaneously at the snap, and when Ashton Jeanty could get to the outside, he showed off a lot of skills, man. A 66.7% outside run success rate. That's a really, really strong number. Again, when we start talking about benchmarks, we really want to get over 65% when we're talking about good players. And I think certainly Ashton Jeanty crossed that mark. And let me also say this too. If we're talking about individual ability. I think broken tackle rate is a really good indicator of that. Now, obviously, it's hard to break tackles when guys are in the backfield, but still, Ashton Jeanty, a 30% broken tackle rate is extremely good. Anything in that 30% area is crazy. And as a matter of fact, it's the third highest broken tackle rate I've charted over the last 2 years. Number one and two, it's Bijan Robinson in 24 and Bijan Robinson in 25. Okay, makes so sense. This is the kind of player that we're talking about.
That's good. I mean, that is really good to hear that he has that potential to do that and be that type of player. Because, yeah, right now the ecosystem is just so much better set up for him to have success. And it really is just kind of, I think, up to him. And that was really, to me, Ashton Jeanty's calling card as a prospect was just how he could stack those broken tackles and really, you know, make more than what was there for him. To me, he's not like the same unbelievable, like fluid and explosive player that like a Bijan Robinson is and not really like a Jahmyr Gibbs. But I think he could be that kind of in that next step down as a running back, which in the right situation can definitely contend for a massive season. So, yeah, honestly, last year, I was really skeptical of the Raiders offense and I was kind of skeptical of what Ashton Jeanty would be able to do. Bottom line, he still had 10 total touchdowns and a lot of yards from scrimmage, but didn't ever quite reach that ceiling because of the environment. I'm optimistic about this environment, man. And it sounds like you're optimistic about him as a player.
Well, they picked up Tyler Lindenbaum too, right? A Pro Bowl center. You get Colton Miller back from a leg fracture that put him on IR in week number four. So health and additions to the offensive line will be a big boon for him. And again, just I don't think we can underestimate the impact that Clint Kubiak's going to have on the run game in general. So we saw that in Seattle. And I think we'll see a lot of that in Las Vegas too, man. So, again, I know people are going to look at the efficiency and have some questions. And I know a lot of people are actually really high on Mike Washington. I'm not that high on Mike Washington at all. I think he's kind of sort of a straight line dude. And I think he will kind of play that Charbonnet role. I know it's always dangerous to like, you know, do the whole offensive, you know, systems comparison. But again, I think there is actually a lot of similarities between Kenneth Walker and Ashton Jeanty. And there is a lot of similarities between Mike Washington and Zach Charbonnet as well. He's just a really straight line player. And I think when they get around, you know, short yardage situations or if they're getting around goal, Mike Washington might be an interesting play right there. We're hoping not.
I was gonna say, I think people are hoping not to see any of what you just said there from like a fantasy standpoint. But I would say maybe see, to me, and obviously you're more educated about this than I am, but like to me, I thought this is more of if we're going to use like the tortured Seattle analogy there, yeah. I almost think that you want Ashton Gentry to be like a souped up version of Zach Charbonnet and Mike Washington to be like a poor man's Kenneth Walker. And what I mean by that is like Ashton Gentry's in there for the important downs. He's a grinder, but a bigger play guy, obviously. Right. And of course, I'm not saying like workload wise, I'm just saying player skill set wise. And then like Mike Washington is the big play, fast, the kind of change of pace option, so that when Mike Washington's in there, they're like, oh yeah, you're going to run some crack toss stuff and maybe get out of, you know, really try to get him on the perimeter and get him rolling. But you're right, he's a little more straight line-ish. So yeah, I think you want, in an ideal world, like Ashton Gentry to be your true bell cow guy, like, you know, 60% of the backfield work goes to him.
That'd be
and
great.
And then Mike Washington's a change of pace option. And I think that that could work, you know, in an outside zone system where it's like, hey, here's the lane, hit it and go. But that's it. That's what you're kind of hoping for there if you are an Ashton Gentry backer, which a lot of people will be this year.
Yeah. The broken tackle rate, like I said, is a highlight. And just him getting to the outside. He's just been a great outside runner. Even when you go back to his collegiate profile, Matt, he's just been great at getting to the outside and winning on the outside. So I am, like I said, multi-generational outside run guy, man. Like, it's all good. I think Gentry should have a really, really nice year in this upcoming season. You know, Omarion Hampton is somebody who through 9 games last year had 737 scrimmage yards. He averaged 4.4 yards per carry. He had 5 total touchdowns. And I highlighted this in his prospect profile that I thought that his role and his fit in the 2025 version of the Chargers offense might be a little bit weird, because Greg Roman runs a ton of man gap stuff and a lot of stuff in between the tackles. Mm-hmm. And I just, and as much as I liked Omarion Hampton, I didn't like him in terms of between the tackles runner. This is somebody that absolutely needs to get to the outside. He's not a great tackle breaker in general, and definitely not a good tackle breaker between the tackles. So, and the charting definitely showed that as well. Yeah. He again showed below average, you know, tackle breaking ability and success rates in between the tackles, whether we're talking about man gap or zone. So now that Mike McDaniel's here, though, with this, you know, should be a pretty fluid outside zone run scheme there for LA, I think that Omarion Hampton is another player that could really kind of sort of shine in 2026 too.
Yeah, that stood out to me reading your profile here and just looking at the data and everything. It's just I was talking with you a lot about this last year. I remember having these conversations about Omarion Hampton and sort of the awkward fit as a gap scheme runner. I think Matt Waldman also echoed some of those concerns as well. Obviously, Waldman does great work with collegiate prospects at the running back position. So that was, to me, something I like kind of kept my eye on. And I think, honestly, you felt that really early statistically for Omarion Hampton, where it just was a little bit of an awkward fit. He didn't really start to get going until kind of the few weeks before he got hurt, which was unfortunate because he was starting to build some momentum there. I thought particularly, as your profile highlights, a lot of like working towards the outside. And that is really what I like about Hampton, is when he can build up speed and he can be a little bit of that freight train. He's a big dude, way bigger than you think. And he's just big and fast, like big, fast, go burr on the outside, baby. And I do kind of think like that makes that really fits more of what I think this offense is going to be than the previous offense. So a lot of reasons to be excited about Omarion Hampton. But yeah, your charting really shows some of the kind of disparate gaps in his work between the inside and the outside, which, you know, I mean, is maybe a little Raheem Mostert-esque if we're talking like, again, tortured
I like
player
that.
Comparisons.
No, I like that. I like that comparison quite a bit, to be honest with you. You know, let me say this. I wrote in my profile that he's like, and I don't mean this to be like disparaging, but he's like a supercharged scat back in that, you know, he's 220 pounds. You think a 220-pound back should get between the tackles and run that way. But you know who else was like that? Was Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is one of the best running backs of all time, but he is so much better when he can get to the outside than he is between the tackles, right? And so you would look at that size and say, well, obviously he can run between the tackles, and Derrick Henry can run between the tackles, but those big 90-yard runs where he's like putting guys into the dirt, those are all runs that go to the outside. I promise you, when you take a look at Derrick Henry's career highlight tape, Very few of his crazy big 50, 60, 70, 80, 90-yard runs, very, very few of those came between the tackles. Most of them come when he gets to the outside. And that's in a similar way how I kind of sort of view Omarion Hampton. If he can get to the outside, big play opportunities open up, and he looks just a lot more comfortable there. He just wasn't great at, and just quite frankly, honestly, below average in terms of breaking tackles when we're talking about in the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that just like the Derrick Henry analogy is really well taken, because I've talked about this a lot with Henry over the years, is that like he's a guy who needs to kind of build up speed in a similar way, like a freight train, right? And mm-hmm. a lot of the way that they remember when he went to the Ravens, the first couple of weeks, it was a little, it wasn't bad, but it was just a little clunky. Like his game with the Ravens, it was definitely a little clunky, because the Ravens have had a very previously under Greg Roman, like shotgun based run game, because Lamar Jackson likes to work out of the gun. Like he's a good mm-hmm. gun runner, but Derrick Henry with Tennessee was so good from under center runs, because he's further back and can build up, like he's further back from when he's going to get the ball, and he can build up yep. speed till he hits the line in those outside zone concepts, and he would just go crazy. And then the Ravens eventually just kind of split the difference and had him running a lot out of the pistol. I remember that it was like week four or something, game against the Bills in his first week there, or first game there, excuse me, first season there, and Henry just went crazy in that game, like with a bunch of explosive plays out of the pistol. I don't think they're going to do that necessarily in Los Angeles. I actually think they'll do a good bit of running out of under center. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an offense obviously out of that tree that wants to get under center. A lot of these guys, like San Francisco was a top 10 under center team last year. So was Los Angeles with the Rams. Like, I mean, the Seattle Seahawks obviously as well. Like these guys all come off that, you know, Shanahan McVay tree. Those are teams that want to really do that. I think the Chargers will probably be higher this year, which I also think will be really interesting from a passing game perspective. They're working a ton on Justin Herbert's footwork, I guess. Like Herbert apparently is having days where he's not even throwing. He's just doing footwork stuff with Mike McDaniel, which I think is really fascinating.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I can't wait to kind of see how that all blends together, but maybe some of that is we're doing footwork out of under center, you know, and like kind of working that like true dropbacks under out of this under center as opposed to out of the shotgun. So that will be really fascinating to watch. I think that could be good for Omarion Hampton too, to kind of build up that speed on the outside zone concepts. Cause that's something that, yeah, I really like the way your charting lays this out, because it kind of matches just what I feel like watching him, is that, yeah, you get him growing on the perimeter, he can really, you know, get cooking there. I'm really curious what you end up thinking about this run game after you go back and look at Devon Achane, if you haven't already, because to me, I thought they really started just that run game under Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins late last season. Nobody was really watching the Dolphins because, you know, gross, but
right.
But I mean, they were like going crazy with Devon Achane and like Patrick Paul and these massive offensive linemen down there in Miami. Aaron Brewer was absolutely cooking.
It's beautiful football.
Beautiful football. And I think that run game potentially with Omarion Hampton in the mix could be pretty exciting for the Chargers.
I agree with that. I think if we're looking at a guy other than Ashton Jeanty who's going to see a huge boost, it's probably Omarion Hampton, man. By the way, I know there has been a lot of kind of like underground buzz, kind of an underswell of support for Keaton Mitchell.
I was going to ask you about this.
Because the Keaton Mitchell
insurgents.
Yes. And it's all the hardcore freaks, right? So I can appreciate this. But that being said, I was like really curious about Keaton Mitchell because I like Kamani Vidal too. So it's actually a decent trio of backs that they've got for LA. And if there's going to be any kind of like cap to his ceiling, I think it might be that, just competition for touches here. But that being said, I just wanted to do a little research in it. And I went back 18 years, all the way back to 2008. Okay. I stopped researching after that. But Jim Harbaugh has consistently leaned on size at the running back position. And that makes sense, right? Like Jim Harbaugh loves man gap, and Jim Harbaugh loves the run game, and he needs to just get good production on the ground. So here's the thing. I went all the way back. I'm talking all the way back to 2008, to his freaking Stanford years. Okay, so both collegiately and NFL. And basically, of all the backs that he has had and given a lot of work to in terms of like lead 1-2 backs, pretty much every back has been north of 200 pounds. And Keaton Mitchell is not that guy, right? He's like, I think 180 pounds or something, right? So, and even Blake Corum, who ran for him at Michigan, was 200 pounds. And I know he's somewhat of a smaller player, but of the nine backs that have started and led Harbaugh teams in carries, seven of them have been at least 210 pounds. Four of them have been north of 220. So again, Jim Harbaugh really, really likes size at the running back position. I know Mike McDaniel is the offensive coordinator, but you're fooling yourself. You are crazy if you don't think a control freak like Jim Harbaugh isn't going to have a say in personnel and how the offense is called and ran. I think he will have his thumb pressed very heavily into the offensive side, but still, I'd be surprised if Keaton Mitchell really honestly got a lot of opportunities. He just hasn't over his career, and Jim Harbaugh, like I said, has really leaned on heft at that position throughout his career as well.
No, it's a really good point by you. And I think, look, if Mike McDaniel wasn't the offensive coordinator here, nobody would really be having this insurgence in terms of there would be no Keaton Mitchell insurgence. But Mike, to their credit, Mike McDaniel, I guess, reportedly, I believe this is actually like a real report, put wanted posters all over the building of Keaton Mitchell and fullback Alec Ingold. Like he put them all over the chart. Like he wanted, he did want Keaton Mitchell here. And yeah, I mean, obviously Devon Achane is a small back and was cooking in that system. So there's definitely like, okay, if Keaton Mitchell, if he's going to thrive somewhere, this is probably the place he would do it.
For sure.
But Amarian Hampton was a first round pick, you know, had a pretty good rookie season.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Keaton Mitchell will get sprinkled in and he will make some cool plays, which is exactly what he did, by the way, in Baltimore. He got sprinkled in and made some cool plays when he was healthy. But even he was never even like the secondary pitch because he's not a pass protector. He's in and all of that, which is why Kamani Vidal is still a name to keep in mind here. Like, again, if we're doing the tortured former team analogy here, Amarian Hampton with the Ravens would be Derrick Henry. Kamani Vidal would be Justice Hill, and Keaton Mitchell would be Keaton Mitchell, which means he's going to get like sprinkled in again and probably in this system will look even better and will make some crazy plays. We're like, oh my God, we got to get this guy the football more, but then he just doesn't get a lot of work. So I'm with you there that I'm still like, I expect to see a lot of Hampton for all the reasons that you listed, especially the size is a big one here. So we don't always talk like true brass tacks. Oh, by the way, just actually before I say that, it's just this Chargers team is pretty deep in the backfield and in the pass catching group. You and I did a video on best ball values for the YouTube channel, which people should check out here pretty shortly on the YouTube channel. Subscribe. And we're talking about like Ladd McConkey and everything and whether he's a better pick in the third round versus Emeka Ibuka. You guys can see how we settled that debate. But one of the things I, you know, was talking about was, I guess maybe I did or did not mention this, like this Chargers pass catching group is even deep, right? And like, same thing with Keaton Mitchell. Mike McDaniel was all gassed up to get Brennan Thompson. Like, are we expecting Brennan Thompson to get 100 targets because Mike McDaniel was gassed up to get him? I don't know about that, but I think he's going to get him in the mix. And, you know, obviously QJ is there and all these different characters. I mean, Trey Harris is there. They're kind of like weirdly deep in the pass catching group. They're kind of weirdly deep with names that everybody knows in the backfield. So it does make projections.
And they're
for
weirdly
all these
deep
guys.
At tight end too.
Yeah, of course. Oh, totally. They go three deep at tight end. Like, it's all guys you've heard of, right? Like, if you're a football dork, it's all guys you've heard of. Now, if you're like the most casual fan, you're maybe not locked in on Charlie Kolar and Keaton Mitchell and Brennan Thompson. But like, if you're listening to this podcast, we say this with love, a football dork and just like we are. So, you know, these guys, like it's a lot of guys that we know they're weirdly deep at all three positions, which I think makes like the distribution of everything interesting. So again, this leads me to my question for you, brass tacks fantasy. We don't always talk about this, but let's talk about it here. Amarian Hampton ADP consensus on Fantasy Pros right now, 15th overall running back 9. Are you paying that iron price for Amarian Hampton in fantasy this year?
I think it's too high. Look, I like the offense a lot, but you know, I just to your point, there's just a lot of depth everywhere. The football's got to go to a lot of different places. It's got to go to tight end. It's got to go to wide receiver. It's going to go to different running backs. I think that price is a little too high. And I like the offense too. So when we're talking about a good offense in a good system, in an offense that's going to score a lot of touchdowns, I get it. I totally understand. But 15 to me feels like the absolute ceiling for somebody like Omarion Hampton. So that's generally why I wouldn't pay that price. I don't think it's bad. I don't. I'm the guy that's always looking for value and upside in home runs. And I don't think at 15, you're going to get a home run with Omarion Hampton, man.
Yeah, you're probably hoping to like return value, I guess, with him. But other players. Yeah, you're right. You're not sneaking anything by anyone. It's essentially with Omarion Hampton there. He's an interesting guy to weigh against like Chase Brown, Kenneth Walker. Those are two other running backs kind of going. And Derrick Henry, 22nd overall running back 12. I'm like pretty good odds. Honestly, Derrick Henry just outscores Omarion Hampton. So I'll be drafting Derrick Henry and, you know, until he wants to stop playing football. It's just the way I'm going to go down with the ship on that one. But yeah, I hear you. So really interesting fantasy pick there is Omarion Hampton.
Okay, the third running back that you could find on the site, receptionperception.com right now, I think is probably the most controversial because Travion Henderson has a lot of supporters. Travion Henderson, again, he's a high-profile pick out of Ohio State, and last year he made a lot of really great highlight plays. I mean, shoot, the guy had 1,100 scrimmage yards. He averaged 5.1 yards per carry. He had 10 total touchdowns. Travion Henderson. I was like shocked when I saw that overall tally, but 10 total touchdowns for Travion Henderson. And yet, Matt, when you look at the chart, it looks so bad, bro. Three out of the four quadrants, when we're talking about outside, inside, man gap, outside, inside zone, three of the four quadrants are red. As a matter of fact, he's one of the worst running backs that I have charted in terms of overall success rate. 42.5% overall success rate is the lowest I have charted over the last 2 years. He's dead last in man gap success rate. He is dead last in zone success rate. He is dead last in inside rushing success rate. And I know the people are going to say, he averaged 5.1 yards per carry. Your charting must be shit because there's no way he's this guy. I know that's what they're saying, Matt. But my point is, when you watch him on a down-by-down basis, there isn't a lot to like. He truly was a back that was just one of the, again, just consistently, I don't even want to say inconsistent, he consistently failed. It just happens to be that when he succeeds, holy shit,
he
man.
He succeeds, yeah.
He is out the gates, boy. Like, I don't know. So, like, again, the charting is the charting. You know, on a down-by-down basis, he was consistently bad. But when he got out there and could get into open space, he looked like a truly special back.
Yeah, it's like home runs and strikeouts basically was his rushing style, which, you know who hates that? Coaches. Coaches hate
that.
They hate the home runs and strikeout back, especially when they have to be the lead back, which Travion Henderson really struggled to be the lead back last year. And my suspicion when even just looking at like not your charting, but just like some of the stats last year for Henderson early on, it's like, well, you know, he's just not really playing that well. And like watching him play, I was like, he's not really playing that well. So everybody's freaking out. Like, why is Ramondre Stevenson getting all this work over Travion Henderson? Like, why is he getting all this? So like, because Stevenson's just been total. I know he's other than fumbles, which, you know, some coaches care more about fumbles than others. Just because Mike Vrabel played for Bill Belichick doesn't mean he's got Bill Belichick's like, you know, stick, you know, up you know what, like about the freaking fumbles. Like just because he played for him, he actually never coached. They're actually not even from the same coaching tree.
Exactly.
He's Mike Vrabel and Bill Belichick. So maybe Bill Belichick or Mike Vrabel's watching Bill Belichick bench all these running backs with fumbles all those years while he was playing for him and be like, God, this guy's an idiot. Like he probably should just like let these guys figure it out. And that's kind of how Travion Henderson was treated last year. Excuse me. Ramondre Stevenson was treated. They just kept giving them the ball. And what I'm just never going to get out of my head, like talking about your projecting Henderson this year, is that in the postseason, even after like Trayvon Henderson admittedly had some really good productive games when Ramondre Stevenson, if you're just looking at box score, right? If you're just box score scouting, he had these really impressive games when Stevenson was out. But to your point, a lot of those were big play induced moments, and he wasn't necessarily successful on like, these are the assignments, executing and everything, as you mentioned, like getting the most out of what was blocked for him. He wasn't always good with that, but he would hit the home runs. Even after that, it's nut cutting time in the postseason. They gave 35 touches to Henderson and 70 to Stevenson on way to playing in the Super Bowl. And you could sit here and say, well, the Patriots offense stunk during the playoffs. And I think that's a fair point, right? But like all told, James, as your charting points out, Henderson had, you know, can we be kind and call it a mixed rookie year?
Yes, I think mixed is good. I think mixed is really good. Yes.
Mixed rookie year. Ramondre Stevenson is back on this team this year, and just box score and total box score scouting, Stevenson had 232 touches and he had 1,291 yards regular season, postseason combined. Henderson had 250 for 1,241. Like, why is this split not going to look exactly the same as it did last year?
I would agree. I think there's, and in my profile, I talk about this, right? Like, I think he can go two ways. Like, he's got, like, he's at the fork in the road right now in terms of his career. Or at least in terms of 2026, I shouldn't say his career. But if he can be more consistent and add positive runs to his arsenal, I do think that he can overtake this backfield, because then when you have more positive runs, then every now and again, when you do hit that home run, you're looking really, really special, right? But if he doesn't do that, then we basically have exactly what we have, to your point, we have the exact same back that we had last year, which is an explosive backup that fans want more of because they've seen the TikTok highlights, because they've seen the YouTube clips, like with like Linkin Park in the background, right? Like, they've seen the slow motion clips and all. It's like, okay, cool. Like, I get it. You know, I totally get it. But on a down-by-down basis, watch this guy play. He's falling at the line of scrimmage. He's getting tackled very easily. Like ankle grabs are bringing him down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's just not – he doesn't see the holes develop. The vision – to me, Matt, the vision is the problem. I highlighted the vision, and it was funny. Like, I had this exact same damn conversation when we were talking about him as a prospect. Right? Like, there was so many explosive plays, but on a down-by-down basis, he charted out poorly. And I know people felt some kind of way about that. They didn't totally agree. And it's the exact same guy collegiately that we saw professionally, but just even more so, where the negative runs were really negative and the positive ones were crazy positive. So I don't know, man. It's like I said, I think when we're at this fork in the road for Trayvon Henderson, if he can add more consistency to his game, he'll be a truly explosive player. Sure, he might be a Pro Bowler, man. He might be a Pro Bowler, honestly. Mm. If we're talking about him adding more consistency to his game, but if he doesn't,
everybody's a
Pro Bowler.
It's to
your point. Like, we're at the exact same point where we are, where he's just a super explosive backup.
Even then, it's like your numbers here: 18.6% broken tackle rate, 6.8% explosive play rate. Like, that's the thing. The explosive plays were like as explosive as you could get, but they still were very few and far in between. So
really few and far in between. And you know, as a matter of fact, man, I talked about this in the profile too, man. Like, his explosive play rate was the lowest I've charted across two seasons at 6.8-something%, 6.9%. But the big play impact, that's different, right? Like, big play impact is about as high as it gets. He had four different touchdown runs that went for 50-plus yards. Again, I have not charted everybody, but let me tell you, Bijan Robinson didn't do that. Jahmyr Gibbs didn't do that. I don't think there was another NFL running back that gave you four different 50-yard touchdown runs in 2025. And this is the thing. Look, I know this is always a dangerous game to play.
But if you take those away. But if you take away his best plays of the season.
I know. But here's the thing. 26.5% of his total rushing yards came on those four plays. 26%. Yeah. That's a lot. And again, if you do take those away, he averaged 3.8 yards per carry. So again, that highlights the point where on a down by down basis, not very good. But man, when he can get out there and do it, he's awesome. You know, so, I thought that was really interesting.
It kind of sounds a little bit like you have the same feeling about Trayvon Henderson that I have about Matthew Golden after their rookie years, which is like, I could see this going either way. You know,
yeah.
this type of rookie season, I know obviously I've been doing the receivers longer than you've been doing the running backs, but I know with like the Matthew Golden profile, it's like this level of receiver, it ain't over, but it's not like, oh yeah, this guy should have got the football way more, stamp it, everything. It's just very mixed, you know, and I think that's the deal with Trayvon Henderson, is very mixed right now, could go either way. I think if you're getting optimistic about him from a fantasy standpoint, which to me, I've been, you know, the ADP is just like, it's a little too aggressive and everything. Like, I mean, why is Ramondre Stevenson's not going to go away? Like, he hasn't done anything to lose the job. And I think that's the problem here for Trayvon Henderson, who, yeah, probably looks like a, can you also talk about his pass protection? Cause that was supposed to be his thing, right?
He was in college, one of the best pass pro guys that I charted. I loved him in pass pro, man. And yeah, I know a lot of different people did too. Yeah. Everyone loved him in pass pro. And then it's funny because then I'm like reading a bunch of stuff about how he wasn't good in pass pro this year. And I really went into it with a critical eye because I'm like, all right, well, let me just take a look here. I'm just confused. I don't think he was bad. And as a matter of fact, I think he was good. I think he was fine. He was worse than expected because in college, his last year at Ohio State, he was freaking awesome. But yeah. I think to say he was bad, I think that's going way too far. Because again, I watched a lot of running back pass pro, and let me tell you some
rough stuff and out there.
There's a lot of bad reps out there. Okay, so I don't think he was bad.
It's a tough
job.
Don't
think he was dumb. It's a very dude. You're standing still. You got a freaking D tackle coming at you. You got a linebacker coming
Somebody
at you.
Full way speed. Bigger than you. Somebody who's always bigger than you. Always has more speed than you. It is a tough. That's why when guys are good at it, they just hang around, baby, and
totally
they play a lot. You know. And coaches, by the way, the guy that you have this really tough job. To block this guy who's bigger than you coming at you with more speed, and they know what they're doing. You don't know what they're doing.
Correct.
This very tough job that you have, the thing that you are protecting that person from is just only the most important person to the entire team because it's the quarterback.
Good point, dude.
It's a really tough job, and it's like the highest stakes job you can have. So when you're good at it, you get to hang around forever.
And dude, so many running backs are flat out bad. So no, I wouldn't say that Trayvon was bad. And again, if you see that online, just understand that that's cap. Like that's a total negative exaggeration.
It's like negative highlight bias. It's like the other, like, oh, it's like the inverse of his explosive plays. Like, cause I think his losses, Trayvon Henderson just looked to me when I watched him, it's like, that was a rough one, real rough.
Oh,
loss.
For sure.
Like, it looks really bad. You know, it just like his explosive runs look really cool, and highlight bias, both negative and positive, always leads you to like fill in the gaps of the rest of it. Well, then it must have, if that one rep was shit, all the reps were shit, but that's not how it works.
I mean, especially for pass pro, because who's really sitting back there and like charting pass pro? You know, it doesn't happen that often, you know, but I mean, I think to your point, like the low lights were not that good. You know, what's really interesting is that running backs with good vision, I don't know why, but they tend to pick up blitzes way better because they just see it sooner and faster, right? And I don't
processing,
think
maybe I don't
yeah,
know,
yeah, right. It's something in regards to that, man. But Trayvon Henderson, not good vision. Guess what? Complex blitzes. Oh, he got absolutely torched. You know. Yeah. So, but again, a lot of running backs kind of fall into that bucket too. I don't think there was anything truly problematic. I think it was fine. I think it was good. I would even actually say I'd lean it was good, but it wasn't great. But yeah, some of the problematic reps were really, really bad.
Interesting. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch him this year. He's somebody I can't wait to hear about, like in training camp. Are they are the reports just like, oh yeah, this guy's cooking really good. Like he's really taking a step forward. Cause then I think we can maybe get a little more excited about him. But if he's the guy he was last year, he's a committee back, which is
Matt. Let me say something. He's going to look awesome in training camp. Okay.
Well, I already see he's got some steam from OTAs, and it's like, well, yeah, that's padless practices.
You know, you talk about this all the time, man. Like, you know, you're running routes against air, you're going to be looking decent. You know, can you do that in the games? I don't know. That's what we'll kind of sort of figure out. I think the preseason games will tell us a lot more than you know, these padded.
Well, last year you got a lot of steam in the preseason from kick returns. So let's focus on the offense this year. It's like, exactly. we got to crank up his fantasy ADP because he's so explosive. Look at him on the kick returns. It's like, okay, well, I don't know. Let's focus on the running back stuff this year.
Exactly. I could, and like, and tell me if, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, man. Like, I felt like I was on an island. We're yes. talking about him on reception percent. And like, I'm literally like, yeah, God, I don't know, guys. Like, we're hyping this dude up on a kick return. Like, you know, you look at the chart, it's not that good. And
you were very much on the, hey, Ramondre Stevenson is better than you think island. And yeah, that exactly. turned out to be correct.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens here in 2026. But to your point, I'm not counting out Ramondre. I think he's, you know, a pretty good back. And Trayvon Henderson showed a lot of inconsistency. So if he can get a little bit more consistent, how do you fix vision? I don't know. But we'll see if that can be something that gets fixed here with Trayvon Henderson. Anyways, go check out the website, receptionperception.com. Those three profiles, full write-ups on those. I think there's some good information that we didn't talk about in those profiles as well. Read the Rashee Rice profile. There's tons of stuff. By the way, we got quarterback profiles hitting the site very, very soon. I think next week, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll get quarterback stuff. We'll get more wide receiver stuff, obviously more running back stuff here as well. Anyways, receptionperception.com is the website. Subscribe to Matt on YouTube as well. A lot of YouTube best ball content can be found there as well. All right, we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Cobb. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.